This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. It's the evening edition. You're with Richard and Ezra. And of course, we're going to be looking at the September issue under our magazine Watch Show, Expatriate Lifestyle. They've had an interesting focus on everyone's favorite topic, education. Joining us is the editor of Expatriate Lifestyle, Ian Johnson. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, thank you.
Now, of course, I don't know whether you're a soothsayer or whether you're a prophet in many ways, but talking about the issue of education in the month of September, I must say, kudos to you, my friend.
Good timing.
Well, this focus on, I guess, the rise of international and private schools, you did an in-depth piece about, expatriate or international education. You must have found out quite a few interesting things, but I think it's something that a lot of folks have already come to terms with as well when it comes to international education.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a very interesting topic at the moment. The reason we've done it in September is a lot of the international schools go back to school in September. But we've really found, we were looking at the explosion of international education in Malaysia. It's been around for almost 70 years now, about 68 years, the longest school has been running. So we want to see how it's developed, how it's changed. So from these old schools all the way through to these brand new schools that only opened a couple of weeks ago.
So how have they kind of evolved over the last years, the last few years?
It's really interesting to look at that. When you look at the sort of 10 or so schools that have been around for decades, you've got those core schools that have been around for a long, long time. In the late sort of 2000s, we started getting a few more. And then really recently in the last 5 years, that number has exploded as maybe parents see international schools as another option apart from the national schools. Then that's opened up a few new opportunities for companies to open international schools.
And so I imagine, you know, way back when international schools first opened here in, I assume, KL or other parts of the country, who were they catering to specifically?
But first one was in KL. So the first school was the Alice Smith School. It's one of the most famous in KL. I think lots of people will know it. And really, it was open to Alice Smith, the founder. It was open for her daughter and then her daughter's friends. So you know, it really was to serve that kind of, she had a need. Her daughter needed an education like she would have got at home. So she opened the school.
Right.
And she invited her friends, and it just grew naturally with the expatriates that were in the country at the time.
It started, I guess, with an invited-only party that turned into a sort of business 70 years old.
Yeah, invite for one.
Invite for one, yeah. And so you mentioned, I guess, the rising number of schools. I mean, you know, I think about the Klang Valley area in terms of international schools or private schools. I mean, I think that number has gone, you know, way past 10, 20, you know, as to where it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. But what number are we at now?
Yeah, the last I heard last month when putting the article together is we're standing at over 100 international schools at the moment.
Wow. Over 100. And this would include primary and secondary schools as well?
That's right. Primary, secondary schools, boarding schools. Yeah, the lot.
Do we know why there's been this kind of sudden explosion of these schools? I mean, what's the demand for them?
One main thing was the relaxation of the rules of who could attend international school. So a few years ago, it was opened up that Malaysian students can attend international school.
Right, right.
So then the only barrier really becomes cost.
Uh-huh.
Now, as the price of education with a number of schools is obviously coming down, it's still expensive, but that price is coming down. So it opens it up to more a bigger audience, basically.
And I guess the other difference about these international schools is that you're focusing on a different syllabus. You're either studying international baccalaureate or you're doing the British system and you're not necessarily exposed to the local curriculum.
That's right. So the vast majority of these schools offer Cambridge International Examinations, which lead to IGCSE in the end. And I guess a lot of parents see that as a good choice if they want to send their students overseas for further education, then they've got that international base already.
But I think what's really interesting is that, you know, I'm just flipping through the magazine right now. And of course, you have a focus on a 17-year-old student. Her name's Julie Sasaki. She's, in fact, a good representation of the, quote, modern international school student. And it's quite interesting because you think about international school kids, the students. You mentioned now Malaysian students are going there. You have a lot of the expatriate community sending their kids there. But in this particular example, you're actually attracting a different audience completely.
Yeah, it's interesting. Julie's from Japan, and she, I think, represents a new community of students at the international schools in Malaysia, of people from other Asian countries that see Malaysia, one, as a good place to learn in English. Mm-hmm. So they can learn in English, they can get their international qualifications that allow them to go overseas. And, of course, it's cheaper than her homeland in Japan, and they just see these opportunities in Malaysia as a great place to learn.
Yeah, and of course, I guess seeing from that vantage point as to what Malaysia means, because this is somebody who probably has gone to other international schools in other countries as well, and said, well, you know what, Malaysia is an interesting option for me. And I'm just trying to think of the parallels of perhaps college kids here looking at other countries like Australia and, you know, UK or Australia or America or Canada as options to go to, and that people are looking now to Malaysia.
Yeah, I think definitely that kind of decision of where you want to study is moving further and further down the school years. Mm. So now people are traveling and are looking for high schools overseas. And that's what Julie's done. She was in international school in Beijing originally, went back to Japan, and then they looked to Malaysia for her kind of end of her schooling.
We're going to be continuing our discussion on international schools, which is the focus of this month's issue of Expatriate Lifestyle. In the studio with us is Ian Johnston. We've got more music coming up. Give Up by Miles Kane right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. It's Richard and Ezra on the Evening Edition, and tonight we're talking about the rise of international and private schools. This is through the September issue of Expatriate Lifestyle. In the studio with us is Ian Johnston, the editor. And of course, we were speaking about, you know, this the range of international schools that are apparent in the Klang Valley and around the country. Now, I wasn't aware that there was the Association of International Malaysian Schools. And what do we know about this particular association, and what are some of its objectives?
Yeah, it's obviously there's such a huge number of international schools now, and there are a few tournaments and a few regional associations, things like FABISIA, which is the Federation of British Schools in Asia. But there wasn't really one key organization of international schools in Malaysia. Mm. So this was AIMS was set up, the Association of International Malaysian Schools. And there's now about 30 schools are members of AIMS. And they look at doing not just sports events together, but sharing professional training and looking at a few different ways that they can all work together collaboratively.
I can imagine it's getting quite competitive now because, you know, as we've discovered, you know, more than 70-odd schools, and I think more and more schools are probably going to be end up joining this particular association.
Well, yeah, and These big schools, they've never really struggled with student population.
Right.
They've always had long waiting lists. It's been difficult to get into the biggest schools. That's probably still the case for the largest schools in Malaysia, but I think increasingly they're seeing the students and parents looking for alternatives, looking for other schools that they could attend if they can't get into these schools.
I mean, a lot of these international schools have, some might say, prohibitive pricing, right? When you were talking to these people, did they kind of explain why perhaps the fees were so expensive?
Well, I think you look at the quality of education you do get in these schools, mm-hmm. and it is excellent. It is really good education from some top teachers, fantastic facilities. If you go and visit some of these schools, you'll be blown away by the facilities they have.
Well, I remember going to, I think, play a friendly soccer match with one of the international schools, and I just couldn't believe it was they had, like, a vending machine. But I kid you not, that vending machine was like, what is it doing in a school?
I think they're even more high-tech than that now.
Yeah, I know. They've got two. But I think, you know, speaking about, you know, who these international schools are catering to, I mean, some of these prices are unbelievable, and I think a lot of people are sort of looking at perhaps lesser and cheaper options, I guess. And how do we make sense of that?
Yeah, well, in our September issue, we wanted to speak to a range of different people. One of the representatives we spoke to was actually the head of a parent-teacher association. Mm. She's a parent herself. And she was talking about pricing of education. And I think with this competition, with these new schools, some of the established schools might have to start looking at their pricing.
Right.
So far, parents or companies of children, who the expatriate companies, paying for education, one or two of those companies might start looking at how much they're shelling out every year for education, because it gets a serious amount.
Well, I mean, if you've got, I mean, we're talking about primary and secondary school. I mean, that chalks up to about either 12 or 11 years of high school education, or high school and primary school education. That could end up more than ₿1 million a year.
12 or so years of tens of thousands of ringgit every year. So it's not cheap. The opportunities, though, for these students when they go overseas, the fact that you've been at an international school is a huge bonus.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you've been surrounded from a young age by dozens of different nationalities gives you such an edge, I think, when you go to university. And then even when you go into the work life afterwards, just to have that international outlook, I think that's one thing that these international schools really can offer.
Yeah, because I think that international outlook, it used to be that you'd only get it in tertiary education, but now I guess it goes even lower and lower now.
Yeah, and if you've had that before you go into tertiary education, then there's nothing unusual when you go to university. Yeah. You know, you can jump straight into that.
Right.
And of all, I guess, the people that you spoke to, what was the most interesting thing that you encountered about some of these schools or some of the people that went to these schools?
That's a good question. I think the interesting thing for me personally is I went to one of these international schools. I was a student there. So now to be looking at it from a journalist point of view and seeing that development, because the one thing for me, when I came out to Malaysia in 2001, the choice of schools was very limited. Mm. It was de facto, you were English, you went to this school. You were American, you went to this school.
Right.
Now I think for parents coming into Malaysia, I think you'd be bewildered by the choice.
Right.
You do an internet search now for international schools in Malaysia, and you don't just get five schools pop up. Mm. You get this incredible number of schools and options that come up for you. So that's where you obviously turn to something like Expatriate Lifestyle, and we can give you the advice.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you want to pick up the issue of this month's September issue of Expatriate Lifestyle, The Faces of Expatriate Education, where Ian looks at the five key stakeholders about the state of international education. Now, Ian, as much as education is a sexy topic, you also look at other things in the issue, and specifically some of the latest hangouts in Taman Tun Dr. Ismail. I mean, that particular area is just chock-a-block right now about different food establishments and bars and restaurants.
Yeah, I think that's another, like the international school. You used
segue perfected.
But you used to know where you were going when you went to TTDI,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you
had two or three options.
Pubs, there was your Tom, Dick and Harry's and things like that. And now you go and you don't really know where to
start.
This
is just in the last couple of years as well. It's
really
everything's popped up.
Yeah. So I think what we wanted to do was give a look. A lot of our readers, if they were going to Taman Tun, I think they go to Sid's Pub.
Right.
You know, it's an expatriate hangout.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But we wanted to show a few more places that you can go to and explore the area in a bit more depth.
Yeah, because I think they have just a wider variety of beyond the pub. You've got sort of wine places, you've got food places, you've got coffee places.
Yeah, and a nice cyclist-themed cafe.
Sorry.
A cyclist-themed cafe.
Isn't the Grumpy Cyclist?
And the Grumpy Cyclist,
right,
yes.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you've got a few of these kind of concepts you see in big major cities around the world. So mm-hmm. to see them now coming to Malaysia is really quite exciting.
Right.
Ian, finally, what else can we expect from this month's issue of Expatriate Lifestyle that we should focus on?
Well, obviously, our key topic is education, but we've got loads more packed in. We've got a big feature on Sabah and travelling to Kota Kinabalu. We've got an interview with Helen Mirren, if you're interested in that.
Who isn't?
And then another story, traveling down to Singapore and looking at different reasons and different things to do down in Singapore.
We've been speaking to Ian Johnston, editor of Expatriate Lifestyle. Thanks for joining us in the studio, Ian. We've got more music coming up right after this, dedicated follow-up fashion by The Kinks, right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.